Okay, let us get ready for puja. Today I think we get Tammy and get Hun. Oh, never mind, get Hun. Both to light the candle and incense. And today is the, is it the 13th? 12, 12 October 2017, Thursday. So we are having our normal meditation come reporting Q&A class. Okay, light the candle and incense, then we can stand and get ready for puja. Okay, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we offer the tree first. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. What about your tong sui? Bring an offer, Do sadhu, 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 sadhu. We wait for the tong sui to come out, and Andrian also brought some apple, I think. We wait for the offering to come out. Sadhu. Amo jambu. Sadhu. Sadhu. No. Put on the tray there, then offer again. Sadhu. 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 sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, you all can be seated. Then let us compose our mind, develop the spiritual faculty of Saddha, Virya. Then mindfully we shall start our puja. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Svakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. You can be seated and turn to page 1 of our chanting book. We shall chant the bandana. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majjhapamadatthana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Padipa Puja, offering of likes. Ganna sarpa dithena dipena tamadang sena diloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang. Ganda sambara yutena dopena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana muttamang. Vanna ganda guno petang etang kusuma santatin jayami munindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kusumena nena punnena mattayena cha hotu mokhang ปูปังมิลายาติยัตตาอิดังเมคายโยตัตตายาติวินาสบาวังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเทปานิยังปริกาปิตังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาตุมุตตมังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเทปาเลปริกาปิตังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาตุมุตตมังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเตโบจานังปริกาปิตังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาตุมุตตมังNow we will do the puja aspiration based on understanding of the significance of all these offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water.May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One.Who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One.Strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body. Diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration, by the power of all these merits born of these offerings,May our spiritual faculties be asada, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya, be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the conditions and affinity to receive them. Sadhu. Sadhu.Sadhu. Okay, let us get ready for puja to the Triple Gem. Padang pajemi. Damang pajemi. Sanghang pajemi.Okay, you all can be seated, then we shall off the light, and you all can have about 25 minutes of meditation. Yeah? Mm. For those who already know how to meditate, yeah, please proceed. Then for those who still need to train their mind, yeah, you can just do so. Okay. For those who still wants to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Yeah? Then try to maintain whatever inner mindfulness, inner calmness, and inner peacefulness for as long as you can. Yeah? These are the mind states that you need to stabilize, develop, so that it can help you develop heedfulness in the midst of life. Not until you can stabilize your mind to be in a state of heedfulness or ever mindful to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Powers taught by the Buddha in the midst of life, you have not developed the true four foundation of mindfulness meditation. So the four foundations of mindfulness, which is mainly dependent on the ability to be mindful, to develop, cannot proceed. Yeah. So the importance of training this mind to develop the stability of mindfulness, to cultivate this daily mindfulness, is the most important. Then if you may recall, the Buddha did emphasize under Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23 on the importance of heedfulness. You cannot stabilize your mind in the midst of life to be in a state of heedfulness. You don't stand a chance. Okay, we will turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities come here. Let them hear the good doctrine or teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Now we chant together. Samanta chakavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokadang dam Savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Iti te so bhagava hang sammasambuddho. Jacarana sampanno sugato lokavidu anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanang buddho bhagavati. Swakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehipaseko opanaiko pachatang peditabo vinohiti. Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Nyapatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Samichipatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Yadidang chatari purisa yukani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savakasangho Ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakeneyo anjali karaneyo Anuttarang punyang ketang lokasati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect, Triple Gem. Buddhang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay. Y'all can be seated. Then we can continue our second session, which is meditation reporting, following by question and answers. Tonight, you all are lucky, huh? Because Sister Kit Hoon has a lot of questions. She WhatsApped to Suyan, then Brother Suyan sent to me. So you all can have the question. Maybe we will go through the question. Then after that, if you got any other question, then we can also discuss it. If you want to report your meditation, you also can. You just have to raise your hand. I will go through the question by Sister Kit Hoon first. I have to locate it. I think it's under Brother Suyan's WhatsApp. Okay, now I got it. I'll read to you. The first question is, as a parent, what should be the right view to show love and care towards our children? That is viewed as not craving or grasping. I may need you to phrase your question more clearly. The second part, I don't know how to connect to your first part. What do you mean in your second part? Is it so that this view is not craving or grasping, is it? Yeah, use the mic.
Thank you, Brother Teo.
Yes.
It's just that I was reading on the suffering.
Yes.
Suffering is due to our craving and due to...
Cause of suffering, yeah. Cause of suffering is due to your craving, yes.
So as a parent, I think we love our children.
Yeah.
And by loving our children, there's also a certain amount of attachment.
Yeah.
and there's also a certain amount of anxiety. With the children. So where is the line where we say we love and yet we know how to detach?
Oh, okay. So your question is, as a parent, what should be the right view to show love and care towards our children? So the second part, ignore it first. Because that is what Kit Hoon wanted to ask. Based on the essential teaching of the Buddha. The first noble truth explained very clearly about the Noble Truth of suffering, which living beings will confront when you go through life, because there are eight conditions, the eight realities of life and existence that can bring about suffering. And all of the causes of suffering the Buddha has already defined under the Second Noble Truth, which is craving. So what she has requested is, as a parent, how can we develop the appropriate right view to advise our children, to show them our actual love and care, so that it will not become wrong view, which will lead to grasping, clinging, attachment, and all those things. So basically, this is the question. So based on your understanding of what the teaching is all about, how do we start? How do we start? Let's open it up for discussion. What are the right view that you should inculcate to your children? Because when they are young, it's easy to teach them. So what do we do most of the time, most parents? Do you realize one thing or not? When you have your first kid especially, you got no time to think of Dhamma, inculcate right view. You like to play with them because you love them so much. Then you tend to care for them over what they call over what word you should use. You like over commit your love until you pamper them without knowing it. Then whatever initially you give in, okay, boy, don't cry. Young. Every time try to make them feel good so that they won't cry. But as a mother, you have the understanding. You will know why they cry, like my mother, because she gave birth to total 9. He said, don't worry about them. As long as they are fed, you take care of what they need to do. Means you got to help them to discharge. You just do that. They will be fine. And the way my mother take care of kids is very good. And that is what I see in her, the love. Of course, she has attachment to all the children, but her good karma. She gave birth to 9, all healthy, no problem. That's why until my neighbor also felt that my parents are very, very blessed. So our neighbor, an old lady, got 3 daughters. One of the first daughter who got married, he got a child who every time falls sick, got problem. Like very difficult to bring up. Then one day, the old lady suggests, why not you go and talk to our neighbor, then make them your foster parent to your eldest son, is it? Kai Jai, you know. And you really won't believe her. The moment he kai the eldest child to my father and my mother, straight away no more problem. Very easy to grow up. All the usual problem of sickness and all those things, all the problematic things, all gone. That's why when my father passed away, this Kai Jai, he came and he wear the, you call it, Tua Ha. You wear what do you call that? The mourning clothes. And he every year will make offering to my father. So these are the, hey, don't go and say Brother Teo say one. Then you all go and make this superstition into a real. You must have the parami to be the type of parent. That's why this old lady, she's very wise in a sense. She observes. Then this one has good karma, good parami. That's why he can be the parent. Actually, they can actually help to improve the karmic thing. And it really happened. Really happened. So coming back to your question, if you really, as a modern parent who has the Dhamma, that you want to maybe impart this knowledge to your children who are getting married or who may be already having children. Because you yourself miss your chance. Huh? Most of you learn the Dhamma after you have children, huh? After you have problems. So, how do you impart this understanding of the Dhamma to your children so that they know how to bring up their child in accordance with proper Buddhist teaching and understanding? So this part is where we are focused on tonight. Yeah. So based on this so-called right view that you have, developed the understanding from the teaching, how should you attend to your children and teach them? Because when they are young, it's very easy. Don't wait till Sunday school only send them. Sunday school send them, you know what they learn or not? They will learn the chanting, of course. Beautiful chanting. Then they will learn the five precepts. And I remember at Brickfield, this kid, at the, sometimes you really laugh. After the Sunday school come out, then you see the kids happily coming out to like gather together. Then after that, the parents supposed to take them back. Then they supposed to have food and all this thing. Then sometimes they remember what the teacher say. Then they tell the parent, "No, Papa, you break precept." Oh. See, wow, the father also got a shock. What do you mean break precept? He said, "You tell lie. You promise already. You never fulfill." He said, "That one is break precept." So, the kid apply it this way, which to me is not helpful. Understand? No. The actual meaning of precept is different. Yeah, you undertake the training rule to abstain from lying, deceiving people, cheating people. So the motive behind the intention is very important. So to teach, of course, I'm not saying that all Sunday school are not good teachers. No, no, no. Please don't get me wrong. There are a lot of dedicated Sunday school teachers, but they can only teach up to the level of understanding that they have. So it's not easy to find a good Sunday school teacher who has the Dhamma. So now I am trying to maybe lead you into all this. So as a kid, they know nothing. Do you understand? So you have to start from young. Then you don't go and behave like normal parent. Initially, over-pamper them, love them, too liberal, too kind to them. Then later on, when they become naughty, you get angry, you get emotional, you start scolding them. This way, they never learn. What you should do is you should observe. You know what is observation or not? Observe means don't perceive them to be naughty or to be cute or whatever. You just observe them, silently observe them. Then you will learn a lot of things about them, their behavior, their character, how they respond to situation. When they make mistake, get into trouble, how they fall, how they cry, and other things. If you don't just, through your conditioning, keep on reacting and responding, because sometimes you worry for them so much, you become so protective, especially when they learn how to walk. Then you scared they fall, understand? But the more scared you are, the more difficult is for them to learn. You have to let them learn through their, I won't say the hard way, through the proper way, means let them try. Initially, they will fall. You can improve the situation by providing cushion and other things. But these are the early stages. So the training part is to observe them and understand them. Then you will come to understand every kid is different. They have their own character, their own personality, and the way they respond different. Some are very quiet. Some are very active. And there are a lot of reasons behind all these things. So this is how you learn to be mindful, to be observant, attentive, is to be mindful. Then from this observation, when you are silently observing without any views and opinion being thrown in, because you don't preconceive anything, then you learn. Then you will have a lot of joy, and then you know very cute. You can even tell your husband or your spouse, you see, this boy now, he is going through this. Afterward, he will fall, then he will cry. Then you learn, that's all. Then you also, the other one different, very different, very naughty one. Fall also nothing one. After that, he will just laugh again and just come out again. So all these are the mindfulness training that you can develop. But you should not be like overprotective of what the kid is doing. Because parents tend to have this concern and worry. That any small thing that happens, get very agitated, very excited. Then sometimes blame the maid or blame your parent who help you to care your children. Then you just like do certain action that you may not even know. You make them feel very unhappy because you thought they have mismanaged your child. Then you just take it from them and say, never mind, I look after. Then the misunderstanding will start. Then the mother or the mother-in-law, I tell you, they will think differently. I have more experience than you. I have delivered so many children. You're only first children. You are trying to tell me what to do. So the misunderstanding and the conflict start. But coming back to the children, the best is to let them learn from life. Let them learn from life means if they fall, let them understand. If you are not stable yet, you have to be careful. So initially, you can teach them to use the walker or whatever. Then try your very best never to get angry with them, never scold them. Show them the love, the care, the concern. Then feel for them. Love and care come from the heart, understand? But they are too young to learn anything at that age. So the initial training, like Papa, Mama, then some parents are very eager to teach them. They buy all those A to Z books, A Apple. So it's good if you want to train them early so that they learn. But the danger of most parents doing this is they kiasu one another. They want to show people their kids are very good, very young already know all these things and all these things. So if your motive is just that, then you will overlook your duty to bring them up in the proper way. I like the way my dad and my mom bring me up. They don't care about me. They say as long as I have food, all the things that they need to do, if I need to pee, they take care. Then if I cry, they know why. Sometimes it's too wet or whatever. Or when I pee, then it wet the thing. Then they will come and take care. But my mother liked me. She said, I never give her problem. And I seldom cry. I only and all those things. Then my father, he never praised me. Never. But he also never scold me. He just keep on telling me, you have to learn how to study, he said. Because to him, he's illiterate, uneducated, and he knows the importance of education. He emphasized one thing, education. Then he said, when you grow up, you have the education, you will be successful. And my father, no matter how well I do, he never praise me. He just see the report card, then he say, okay, sign, and pass back to me. I remember standard one and standard two, I must have broken his heart. Standard one, because it's an English school, I got 10-0, all the subjects 0, and I was the last in that class. And he never scold me. he just said enough. One sacrificial lamb enough. The rest of my brothers and sisters all go to Chinese school. And so karma, I have to go to English school. And he chose the best school for me. This is a particular way that I want to share so that you understand. There can be many other ways. But for me, it's very simple because me and my wife, we have the Dhamma. That's why I bring my two kids up differently. My emphasis is very simple. I never really want to punish them or scold them or what. I talk to them. Then what we do is, my wife will like have to play the role of, they say, the not so nice parents. Because my wife had to train them. Sometimes too naughty, have to discipline them. Yeah. And sometimes she got to raise her voice because no choice. When they are certain age, especially 2 or 3 years old at that time, they tend to cling to my wife, you know. She used to say, beliako. Keep on wanting her to carry. Then she come back from school so tired. Cooking also want her to carry on one hand and cook. Oh, until she... Yeah, sometimes she just say, cannot. Until one day I remember, there was one incident. He got so, like enough of them, I tell them, you continue, I'm going to throw you out. And really throw them out, lock the gate. Then the two miserable kids cry out there. Then, of course, we let them come in. Now, then I play the role of the good one, the father. Then I go and talk to them. Then console them and say, yeah, what happened? Why did mom do all this? And then they will tell you, understand? They will tell you. Mom just now was unhappy because according to mom, we tend to stick to her and all those things. But I say, now you know, mom love you so much, sacrifice so much for you, care for you. These are the things you must tell the children. Mom was the one that cooked for you, take care of our whatever daily need, means when you are sick, she cares for you. When you are young, she feed you. Yeah. Then, a lot of times, she sacrifices her sleep and all those things just to take care of you. That's why he is your mom. Then you have to tell them, as your mom, they did so many things. When you are sick, they not only care for you, they take you to see doctor. Then you go to kindergarten, they are the one that send you and make sure you are safely back. Then she is the one who teach you. Yeah. So all this sacrifice, you must have gratitude towards them. This is the training part. You cultivate goodness, wholesomeness, virtue, starting with gratitude. Then you should pay respect to your mother because they give you life. They bring you to this world. Then your father too. They work so hard to bring back the money to make sure we have enough food and shelter. Then whatever surplus, maybe to improve our life. That's why we can have our car. We can have proper house. Then when we have money, we can do renovation. So that they appreciate life. They appreciate what we have done and sacrifice for them. Then I used to share with my kid. I said, my parent, which is their grandparent, they are illiterate. So they see the importance of education. That's why they stress to me the importance of education. Then my father take care of citizenship because he knew to be without citizenship is a very serious consequence. So he makes sure the birth cert, the IC, the citizenship all taken care of. That's why we don't have problem. So I say I learn from them. Then I pass this experience to you. But when they come to me, I'm the second generation. As a first generation kid, my parents, they are not wealthy. They are simple people. Poor, but not that poor in the sense that never have problem with the 3 meals, food and shelter was never a problem. So they tried their very best to provide for us, but they sacrificed a lot. My father and mother never go to cinema until when they are very, very old. So they sacrifice a lot of life, luxury, and all those things for us. So as far as education is concerned, my father said, you leave it to me to earn the money to pay for your fees and your education. Your duty is to just study. Yeah. So through this, I told my kid, when your time come, I will let you have more understanding of life, because if you are not like if you are contented with what I can provide for you, then you don't have to, like me, first generation kid, strive on for the first 10 to 15 years just to have the ability to own a house, own a car, bring up the family. So I sacrificed almost 15 years, remember, to build up my initial, I won't say it's financial freedom, it's to provide for my family, to provide them with all the basic need of an average good family. So of course, their education, everything. But we don't like normal parents who pamper them and force them to study and all things. No. Every time I got problem, I would teach them there and then. I remember my mother came now and helped to take care of my two kids. My wife also appreciate. Then she learned a lot of things from my mother too. Initially, of course, very difficult. Well, my mother speak Hakka. She don't know. She's Hokkien. Then she don't like the way my mother do things, because old people, you know, all the old food left over, they want to put in the fridge. And my wife cannot tolerate. Sometimes 3 days still there. But that was only the initial stage. The moment she learned, she appreciated. Well, my mother actually got a lot of experience with kids. Then the way he disciplined the kid, I tell you, very good. But when my wife come back and me come back, the two kids become naughty already. My son will make face at my mother. No. Well, he know we love them. My mother, when we are working, my wife went to school, ask him to sit. My girl, so sit means sit on. You don't sit, he cane on. That's why the two were scared. So what they did was they go and hide the cane. They go and hide the cane. Then we came to know. Then we warned the two. I said, you cannot do that, because you know who the granny is. At first, my son cannot understand. No. My daughter understand. I had to use this colloquial indirect way. No. I said, you know who your mommy is? He said, yes. Then I said, do you know who Popo is? We are in Hakka. Granny is called Popo. Popo is your daddy's mommy. And then only he understand. No? Yeah. Then when my daughter was the elder one, then when we give her to my son, which was 2 years later, we had to teach her, no, to understand who the newborn boy is. Because she just couldn't adjust to what happened. No? Suddenly from the hospital, bring back one, supposed to be a brother, he don't know what is a brother. Then my wife used to like sleep with her, take care. But with the newborn baby, of course, he tell my daughter to sleep the other side. She got so jealous. You know what she did? She go and squeeze in between and push the small fellow away. My wife got a shock when she woke up. Then normal people would have scolded the daughter, and I didn't. I just tell my daughter, I said, you come. Then I explained to my daughter, I said, do you know who he is? He's your brother. We are your parents. And you, in this world, always remember, he is your only brother. And you are the only sister. The two of you have to learn to love each other care and respect for each other, because this is the fact. And if you are the sister, Jeje, you cannot take care of your younger brother and love. You are not the real Jeje, and you don't have that moral value, the love, the care. Then he look at it differently, you know, when she understand. Then starts to like love him, no more jealousy already. And this is how the kid learn. Then I have to explain many things to. I say, as a Jeje, you always remember, anything brother do wrong, you don't hit him or punish him. You come back, wait till I come back, you tell me, I will deal with him. Luckily, I told my daughter that. Otherwise, the two, you know, at certain age, they fight one. They fight. Then my daughter, very smart. Every time, wait for me to come back. Wait for me to come back, the small fellow kena already. Then I say, okay, now you understand what you did wrong. Okay, bring the cane. He go and take from the place he saw off. Then he passed away. When I cane him, of course, not very hard. He felt like he has done something very wrong. So it's the shame that you introduce to them so that they know what respect is, what shame is when you do things wrongly. Then because she make face to my mother, you remember? After we came back, he make face. He used the facial expression, he make his mouth like he don't like you, he show you that type of face. Then I warn her now, I say, do you know who Popo is or not? Your daddy's mommy, you do that to her. I tell you, you better watch out for karma. He don't believe, no, initially. He don't believe. And you know what happened? Because I joined a club in Shah Alam. It's a government club. We pay, I think, 5,000. Then government servant special discount, I think, 2,000. So we went for this swimming pool and on the weekend. So what happened was at the swimming pool, she liked to swim, you know, my boy and my daughter. Because we sent them to train the divers. Darius, just pluck them and throw them into the pool, and they learn very fast. That's why there's no fear. If it's your own kid, you dare not throw. But because the trainer throw, they learn very fast. What happened was my son fell. Then he was crying. Then I came along. Then I said, don't worry, come, I take you. Then I was about to clean him up. No. Then I realized the face was exactly what she did to my mother. No. Then I took him to the changing room. I showed him. I said, you look at your face. And this is what you did to Popo. This is what karma is. You kena. Really kena. From that day onward, he dare not make face to my mother. Yeah. He learned. So all this right view thing about karma, you have to slowly, slowly educate them. I say, do you know why you have the good life? Well, in the past, you have been good parents before. Like daddy, mommy, take care of your children, your kid. So now you come this life, you have condition to have parents like us who provide for you, care for you, educate you differently. So when they go to school, my advice is very simple. Don't try to score. Don't try to do well. Just do your best. Try your best. Then learn to be attentive in school. Of course, I don't use the word mindfulness. I say pay attention in school. Observe your fellow students, means classmates and all those things. Then observe your teacher. I just want you to learn two things, the science and the language, I say. Of course, science include mathematics and all those things. Then try your best so that they are not subject to pressure to perform and all those things. And surprisingly, they did very well. They topped the school, they topped the uni, and they did very well, and they became very successful. And they also used to tell me, as they grew up, they said, daddy, our family is different. They observed, they said, we seldom have problem in the family, whereas the classmate got a lot of upside-down problem, a lot of very, very severe type of problem, where the parent divorced, never talk, a lot of quarrel, fighting, then relationship between children and parents also suffer tremendously. There was one classmate gonna chase out of the house, then quietly came and stay with us. So my usual question is, you make sure your parents know that you are here to overnight. So my son did not lie. He said, yeah, I talked to him. The friend never tell the parent, because gonna chase out how to tell the parent. Then somehow the parent knew where the son was. No? The next morning I received a phone call. No? Then he know my son's name. No? And I was so surprised. This, it was the father of that classmate. You know what he told me or not? You better tell your son not to influence my son. I want him back before 12 today. Because I was caught, I totally don't know what is going on. I said, may I know your name again? Oh, who are you actually? He said, you don't pretend. He said, Mr. Teo, you don't pretend. I said, I'm not pretending. I really don't know who are you. He said, I'm the father of the classmate who stay at your house. He said, it seems, the father said, I was told your son actually was the naughty one. That brainwash him and ask him to run away from the house. Then only I say, okay, I will sort it out. Then I call the two together, sit down. I say, what happened? I say, the father just called. Then my son have to tell me the truth. I say, if that's the case, very easy. I say, I will know how to deal with the father when he call again. But I say, don't worry. I advise the son. The son actually, not my son, that father's son. He, after I explained all this, he saw I was so different from his father. I was trying to develop that. I never started to assume and just call them and tell them, why did you lie to me? Why don't you tell me the truth? Forget about it. This will not solve the problem. Then I told my son's classmate, I said, you go back, you will be in deep trouble, I tell you. But nevertheless, he is still your father, I said. You have to learn to respect him. Then, of course, the kid tell me, he said, no, the way he throw things at me, scold me, chase me out of the house, I cannot tolerate that type of father, I said. From the son, no. Then I look at him, I said, you are still young. There are a lot more things you need to learn, I said. The undeniable fact is he is your father. No matter how bad or how negative he is still your father. You can never deny he provides for you when you are young. Then this is the father I told you, who calculate every cent he spends on his children, and record them and tell the children when you reach the age of 21 or when you graduate, you started working and you had to pay me back. But this son turned out to be very successful financially, until the father also tick and gang finally. Yeah, this guy actually is a blessing in this guy, but he went through that tough environment. He determined to prove to the father and do better than the father. And really make it. He has very successful life. But got problem too. Other type of problem. Anyway, to cut the story short, now you understand the right view. Teach them while they are young, but you must have the Dhamma. You must teach them the right view, but you cannot throw Dhamma to them. No point. But when they went to kindergarten, they learned very fast. Then the time I was doing the recording, the Dhamma tape. So we travel home to Alastair long distance in the car. I always on the Dhamma tape, the Dhamma talk and all those things. Then I explained this talk to my wife. And the two kids were listening, Then when we were at Brickfield Temple, that time my kid was only 7 years old or 8 years old. He was so short. Then some of the Buddhist friends who know me very well, they were so amazed. A small boy like that speak English to me like an adult talking. Really, like he understand. Then he was at the age of 4, only actually he registered for Sunday school and all those things, because the daughter was more elderly, 2 years older. Then they went through kindergarten very fast. The teacher also liked them. Then they learned very fast, because all these things they already learned from me. Yeah. Then they attended the novitiate program. He even answered a lot of Dhamma questions by Reverend Maninder and all those things. So since young, they have this Dhamma understanding. Then they know a lot of these things. Then I don't need to teach them much, because it's from their past. But it's the way you bring them up. And this is the way I believe other people can also develop. So everyone is different, every parent is different. But without the Dhamma, you cannot do all this. That's why I was lucky, because I already had the Dhamma by then. And I understand all this very clearly. That's why the way I approach life is very different. That's why you take care of karma, karma take care of your life, and you will have a good life. And all these are possible, not difficult. That's why the Cultivating the Bodhisattva Way, the book, all the right view inside there, you make sure you put in the aspiration and the determination, so that future life, you come life after life, you have this right view, right understanding. Then you will have the ability to share all this with the world, with your own children. And if there is condition, with your family members too. That's how they learn. Okay? So this is the first part. Then we go to the second question. Do you have any question? Yeah.
More of the parents' attachment to the children.
Oh, okay. That one I will explain after this. That one is your own delusion. It's nothing to do with the Buddha Dhamma. That's why I say you do not over pamper them. You do not over, like, so-called in the name of love, it becomes attachment. Care means what? Care means what? If I'm a person who care for others, it doesn't mean your children only you have the love and the care, understand? Your love and the care is always a part of your virtue. Under whatever condition, circumstances, people whom you don't know, if there is condition, you will also express your love and your care. So this is without attachment, universal, because this is a virtue that a cultivator should develop. If your love and care is based on relationship, if it's my loved one, my children, then only I have love and care. If it's not, then I don't have. And that's where they go wrong. It becomes attachment. Because you cling to the word loved one. You think they really belong to you. Without the Dhamma, you will attach, I tell you. Well, biologically, you give birth to them. And you cannot deny that they are not your children. They are your children. But the Buddha said, they are your children only within the conditioned world. Within the conditioned world, this form and mind don't belong to you. But there is such thing as a law of karma. There is such thing as life. There is such thing as a human being, an individual, that is subject to karma. So, relationship-wise, karma recognizes relationship. But ultimate truth, see through all this and realize there is no such thing as my son, my wealth. Like the Buddha say, this only the fools lament, for that very body doesn't belong to him, wherein son, wherein wealth, wherein possession. All this is delusion. Why you attach? Because you believe you are real. You believe you give birth to them, they are your children. So you have that attachment to them. Even this body too, you think belong to you. That's why you have attachment. Then you worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. That's how suffering comes to be. So that part need understanding, Dhamma. So it's not to say this is human nature to attach. No such thing. When you understand, you do your duty. Duty means what? There's a karmic duty that you have to do. If you do your duty well, you take care of your children, provide for them, give them the freedom to live their life, in future you will have parents who will give you the same condition and opportunity. But you force them to study the way you want them to study and to become that professional that will make you feel like very proud parent, then you be careful. Because it is not what they want. They may suffer. They may have problem. So I have told you all before, there was one Dhamma friend who came to my class. She was new. And she was listening to my sharing. Then she offered to take me home. And in the car, she told me, "Brother, what you say was very true." That was precisely what the son did to him. When he graduated as an engineer, he threw the degree in front of the mother, the result. "This is what you want. From now onward, please don't interfere in my life." The son just walked out of the house. "You want me to be an engineer? I'm satisfied." She cried for 3 days and three nights, she told me. She didn't know it has caused so much mental agony and emotion to the son. So if you do this to your children, in future you will have parents who also force you to study the course that you don't like, then you also become equally miserable. This is what karma is all about. You reap what you sow. So if you don't want to end up this way, make sure you are a good parent. If you don't want to end up the other way, you make sure you are a good child. We feel a piety, and as now we respect, gratitude, and understanding. If you do that, you will have good children in the future who will respect you, honor you, have gratitude towards you, kind to you, love you truly with your heart and all those things. So this is what Dhamma is all about. If you understand there is such thing as a nature's law of karma that governs all this, you will do your duty. You will need not neglect your duty. We play many roles, that's why we got many duties. When we are a kid, we play the role of a kid as a duty towards our parents. And this is in the Sila Vatsigalo Vada Sutta. There's a sutta that talks about this. Then as you grow up, you become parent, you play another role. As you go to office, you play another role. When you become bosses, you play another role. All this has their duty. Your duty towards your employee, your loved ones, then towards society, towards the environment, towards all beings who have relationship with you. So this is what karma is all about. You treat people well, you do your duty well, you will reap the fruit of wholesomeness. Okay? So that part is more Dhamma. It's not a question of how not to attach. How not to attach is a wrong teaching, like letting go. When you don't have the understanding, you cannot let go. You will grasp, you will cling. When you have the understanding, it's automatic. You will not attack. But you will love them with all your heart. Because you have a duty towards them. They are your children. You have to provide for them. Because as a parent, you have that duty to bring them up. Educate them. Sacrifice for them. Care for them. And actually arrange for their marriage too. The Buddha said, yes, it's inside there. Your children object, you can quote the Buddha, but don't quote me. For us, it's their life, let them decide. But you're supposed to arrange for their marriage. Means you play your role, understand? You're supposed to go and tai chan, you should willingly go. You don't go and tell them, "Hey, this is you getting married, not me. Don't come and disturb me," or like that. Next time, your parents also will do the same thing to you in future when you become kid. But if you help them, you say, "No problem. Tell me which lucky lady, I will go and approach them." And on your behalf, as parents, we will do our duty. So this is what Dhamma is all about. Okay, we go on to the next question. Contentment, how to encounter contentment to a person when the bare necessity of Maslow's need theory of the first level is not fulfilled. So the first level is food and shelter. So how to inculcate contentment to somebody. As far as Dhamma is concerned, forget about trying to do all this when you yourself has not developed the understanding. Do you understand? You cannot teach people or inculcate all this good quality into somebody if you yourself don't have the Dhamma. So you should reverse the question to yourself. Understand? If, let's say, I'm born into a condition where I don't even have food and shelter, how can I develop contentment? It's a better question, isn't it? Yeah? If I'm born into a situation where I don't even have food and shelter, so my primary concern is food and shelter, the basic need of life. So how do you cultivate contentment? Through right view, understand? Law of karma. Because I didn't have enough dana parami. That's why this life I come, I'm miserable. Food and shelter also don't have. Yeah, I don't have dana parami. So I know if this is the weakness, I will do something to it this life. Then to have contentment means I accept with right view what happened. The past condition, the present. But it does not dominate over you. So the past I cannot change. I have to abide by it. That's why I have to accept the reality. Yes, I'm born of my karma. Heir to my karma. Conditioned and supported by my karma. I'm what I am because of my karma. So if I understand this is all due to karma, I must take care of karma so that my life can change from now onward. That's why I must cultivate acceptance, contentment. Contentment means I will be contented if I can get a job to provide for my basic need, which is only food and shelter. Sometimes you may even just sacrifice shelter. Yeah? You say, you provide me with 3 meals and allow me to have a place to stay, then I will work for you. So this one you get a place to stay, but you don't have your own home shelter. Then you are given food, but just enough to feed you. So that is the first level of the Maslow need hierarchy. So if you have contentment, you should count your blessing. At least you are much better off than somebody who can't even find a job, understand? Who has to walk in the street, go through the cold, the misery of the climate, at the mercy of the climate. Have you all really observed and seen during the early days, it's very common. A lot of these Indians, I think, they sleep on the corridor of the shops. And you can see the wind, the rain, and all those things. And they don't even have enough clothing to keep them warm. Some, they sleep underneath the highway, the bridge, and all those things. Some, they go to abandoned house and all those things. So this is all karma. So contentment comes from your understanding. Because you got no choice. You have to be contented with what you have. Yeah, this is the law of karma. You reap what you sow. If you have contentment, you don't become miserable. When you are contented with life, you can have more joy, more happiness. Even when you are very sick. When all your organ and your maybe vision, everything are failing you. You all, I believe, also must have read in the internet. For me, it's the Dhamma way. You got two choices. React to it, project your thought, and become miserable. Accept it with understanding, then move on. So you must have what they call contentment and develop the joy that at least your other senses are still intact. Understand? They are still providing for you. Yes. Use that one. Yeah.
How do we manage contentment?
It's not for you to manage. Contentment is an understanding.
Correct, but if you get a very young child to be very contented, it also means they lack...
That is your second question, isn't it? You see the particular race of people who live a simple life and all those things, then they become lazy. It's not that. That is what you perceive and you observe. You want to understand that thing. It's a lot to do with culture. You off it first.
Actually, has no drive.
I will explain all this. Don't worry, yeah, Kevin. Yeah. You see, to you, you think contentment means, the Buddha say, be contented with what you have. Then no more drive, no more ambition. No! Contentment doesn't mean that, anasana. That is delusion again. When I'm contented means I don't have any more craving, anasana. Like the Buddha, he was asked, what is the highest wealth? Contentment is the highest wealth. When I'm contented, means I got no more need. That's why I'm wealthy. But if you are very wealthy and rich, and you still crave for money, you don't have contentment. You understand?
We are meant to need to eat, to need a shelter. But even if you don't have that, how can we be contented? I was watching a YouTube of the Nepalese.
Yeah.
CNN News and the Nepalese then so poor.
Yeah.
They sell the kidney.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so they sell the kidney. It's not like it's going to be. They don't make them rich, but it tie them through that bad times.
Yeah.
So they talk about their suffering lah.
Yeah.
Tremendous suffering that they go through.
Yeah.
And then. How can people like that be contented, right?
But that's why I already in the very beginning explained to you, Chui Hood, don't try to do that when you yourself don't have the Dhamma, understand or not? Contentment is with understanding. It's not your version of contentment, understand? Your version of contentment is I am miserable, how can I be contented? A lot of people who are without anything, like those who renounce the world, do you think they own anything? Like my teacher last time, Ajahn Yantra, he just walk out of the house with a white cloth, go into the forest, jungle, without owning anything, cannot hold money, go to arms round. Then sometimes no food also don't eat. And they are so happy, fully contented, because they have Dhamma. Understand? So contentment is not what your materialistic mind think, understand or not? When I am suffering, when I am misery, don't talk to me about the Dhamma. Don't talk to me about contempt. But this is the deluded mind, you understand not? Without Dhamma, you cannot have true contentment. That's why I look at your question. All come from the mind that has not developed the Dhamma. That's why your approach. Correct, but now I'm trying to teach you, but you're not listening. Your old views are still rigid. You are not emptying your cup. Open mind. That's why you ask. Your question already asked. I already explained, but you're not listening. Your view is still expressed out. That's why I have to hit harder for you to open up. Understand? But you have to have an open mind to feel my words, to understand what that thing is. Can you understand when I give you the example that my teacher, he has not become a monk. No? He just want to be a yogi. Ajahn Yantra, that Thai monk. You know how he started or not? He studied, he is not good at study. So he studied tourism. To give the tourist industry service and all things. And when he graduated, he worked for a small hotel. I tell you. He got so disenchanted with life. You know why? Well, he has Dhamma since young. Then he saw people who come and stay at hotel. Well, he came from a very poor place in Thailand, very remote. Nakhon Sitamalat, very rural, the seaside area. They were very poor. Then when he came down to the city, he saw the city people crazy, is it? They come and rent the hotel room. The hotel room to him is a luxury, you know. And yet they complain so much, you know. This one don't have that one. This one not working, that one not working. Keep on calling. And he said, this is crazy. If this is how the people live the materialistic life, they will have no peace. Yeah, they got so much craving. to him, he is not only contented now, he would have be full of joy and gratitude and count his good blessing if he can just stay in this hotel room for one night to really enjoy life and live that life. So to him, he cannot understand why people with this type of hotel condition yet complain. That's why he decided to walk out of the job and become a yogi, wear white and go into the forest. Of course, he told his parents. He just go. And you say he got no contentment. If you were him, maybe you will have problem. But he was full of joy, peace, happiness. He meditated every day. And while going for alms round, Pindapat, he make his own coconut shell alms bowl. He don't have a proper bath. He is not a monk. Then he make his own begging bowl and walking stick and all those things. And he survived through the nature. Then he wrote all the poem. He was full of joy, peace, calmness, happiness. That is what contentment is. That is what Dhamma is, can really make you different. So your perspective of life, you shouldn't reside on your present materialistic outlook of conditioning from your education, your tradition, or then you look at it from that point of view, then you cannot see the Dhamma. The Dhamma is when you understand life, like I say, you got two choices. If you are not happy with your life, means you have delusion, ignorance. Where you cannot come to terms with that reality, you don't have right view. Then you have a lot of craving. Your thought always compare with people who have. Why can't you compare with people who are worse off than you? Then you will appreciate life. Understand now? At least you got your senses intact. Understand now? There are people who are born blind, crippled. Blind, then the other senses also affected. Dumb, cannot hear, cannot speak. How? Worse. At least your senses is intact. Your only problem is food and shelter. Small matter to me. Understand? Then those who are born disease, traumatic disease, worse still. So if you reflect and contemplate on all those people, you count your own blessing and you have contentment. At least now my senses are intact. I can do a lot of things. I can experience a lot of things which other people may not be able to. The only thing is materialistic wealth I don't have because karma. So when I have right view, I'm contented. I reap what I sow. I understand why I am in this situation. Then there is joy. Then you know how to work towards change to develop all this understanding. Okay? I have to run through a bit faster, otherwise I cannot finish your question. Okay, the next one, question 3. How can one remove self-pride and self-ego? Don't we need some of this to push ourselves to reach higher path of achievement in this mundane world? Then for the longest time, our certain race counterpart have always been a layback and easy life. Life was slow, simple, and laid back. They are then labeled as lazy, no drive, and without planning and ambition. So this one just now I answer you a bit, but you cut short me by telling me all your CNN story. Understand? You see, this is not how you will perceive the world when you have the Dhamma. It doesn't mean that certain particular race, no drive, like lay back, then you say they are lazy. All this has a lot to do with what? Culture, understand? You look at the Chinese culture, 5,000 over years, what is their emphasis? Their emphasis is to come out of the poverty cycle, you must do well in your education, understand? That's why we work very hard. We are very hard working. And the other culture is because their history is different. And you cannot say why their DNA is also different. Because they don't have the Chinese culture which is so rich. I was last time, same surname, cannot get married. Do you know that? Now, same surname, different lineage, can. We were so strict in our choice of gene, That's why the evolution of the Chinese culture, the race, is very different. And we have our history. So this is the pertinent condition behind, not so much of all those things. But when it comes to Dhamma, it's again revolutionary. It got nothing to do with all this DNA thing and all those things anymore. Because when you have your karma, even among that particular race, you have very poor people, miserable people. You have very successful people. So you cannot say that race all successful, that race all lazy. No, that particular race that you say lazy, they are also very smart people who achieve and did very well too. You look at Mahathir, he didn't easier. During his age, he was Lee Kuan Yew's bachelor, and he graduated as a doctor. That time was no such thing as special right and privilege in education. No, they also had to study doctorate from UK, you know. And he's smart. Of course, you can say he makes and all those things. But the fact is, there are many who really did it. So it's nothing to do with all those cultural things that you mentioned about all these so-called people. We have to look at it from Dhamma point of view. So you ask about how not to be successful in life, you don't have self-pride. Huh? If you remove self-pride and self-ego, then you will not be successful. Straight away, I can tell you, completely wrong view. Because I went through, I don't have self-pride. I was very simple. I used to tell you I'm very proud of what my mother did for me, the clothing. Long, short, used very cheap cloth to make. Then she herself is a tailor. She is not a trained tailor. So that's why she did all this clothing. Normal people will be like very shameful to dress one of these. But to me, I dress it with pride. I went to school with this uniform. And they laugh at me. Then I said, you can laugh, but for me, I have a lot of contentment, a lot of joy. Where my mother make for me. What you get is you bought it from the supermarket or the shop. Your mother didn't do it for you. My mother, out of love for me, did it for me. And I'm very proud. And there is no pride involved to dress up very well. No, since young, I have a lot of contentment. I'm very simple. Even my mother-in-law and father-in-law know I eat very simple food. I'm very easy with food and contented with food. And I live a very simple life. And yet, I know how to build up my career and become very successful in all aspects of life. From academic to career, I reached the pinnacle of my career. You read the book, you will know, the seminar book. Then, when it comes to materialistic success, I also have all financial freedom. Then, relationship, I also reached the pinnacle of it. Then, spiritually, Dhamma-wise, I also reached the pinnacle of it. Then, your question which you ask, you perceive it from a different view. You should perceive it from Dhamma. How with the Dhamma, I can do away with self-pride, the ego, and yet the form of mind, which is within the conditioned world, can become successful. It can still have the motivation and the drive, because you have the spiritual faculty, you understand? When you have faith in the Buddha and his teaching, when you understand life, you will know how to live life. You will be successful in life. Can you follow that path? When you don't understand life, you want to succeed in life, there is no way, understand? That's why the Four Noble Truths, the teaching, is the secret of life. If you don't understand that, then you will go through the usual miserable way to live life, because you don't understand life. Then you try everything, and your thought keep on telling you, cannot. Just like the salesman used to tell me, Brother Theo, I'm a salesman. If I keep the precept not to lie, I cannot be a salesman. I say, no such thing. I did sales too. I was an insurance agent for 3 years. I become top agent. I never lied. It's possible. That's why you have to have the understanding. It's not the commonly perceived type through delusion. So life can be understood. The moment you understand life, you know how to live life, then all these things become simple. No more an issue, no more a problem. You don't develop that type of wrong view anymore. Then your fourth question, sometimes bad things happen to good people. Sometimes bad things happen to good people think. What is it? I think the last word is extra, isn't it? Sometimes bad things happen to good people, The word thing is repeated, I think. They ask why. Probably it's due to their bad karmic past. So when this bad event is happening to him, what should be the right view and the right understanding? Is it acceptance? Question 4, you check. It's an extra word, isn't it? It's only sometimes bad things happen to good people. You see, a lot of people used to, when we come to the topic karma, I think our Tuesday class is coming to that topic soon. They always ask me the opposite of what you ask. Why did good things happen to bad people? Yours is, why did bad things happen to good people? Understand? They say those fellow rob, kill, rape, and all those things, yet they are living lavish life. Is it? Like there is no karma. What do you think? Because your definition of good and bad is based on the moment, the present moment life, the present life. That's why you say, why did bad things happen to good people? Good according to you. Because you think this life, he did a lot of good. Understand not? Do you understand? And the worst is, when that person himself or herself say, I have done nothing wrong. All this while I've been doing all the good things. I want my kid to be successful. I tell them to study this. Are these good things? Forcing people to study things that they don't like to study. Good according to you, understand? Good has got no meaning. The heart that is incapable of evil is naturally good. The absence of evil is good. That's why the Buddha said, develop mindfulness to see your mental intention. You can avoid all evil, you are automatically good. But if you don't have the ability to be mindful, to be heedful, to see your mental intention, to understand the three evil root, and avoid all evil, whatever you do is not good. Good according to you, relative, selfish good. Understand? Good according to you. May not be good to your children, or your enemy, or your competitor. So good, bad, are duality, relative. Karma is very fair, understand? It's a nature's law. Like live wire, I used to say. Live wire, if you don't protect yourself, you hold, it will electrocute you. It doesn't say, the live wire doesn't say, oh, you are spiritual, holy, I will never electrocute you. I only electrocute the cruel or evil view. No such thing. Well, this is science, nature's law. As long as you are not insulated, electrocute. So karma is like that. You reap what you sow. Do good because good. Do evil because evil. You must not doubt. You must have faith. You must find out. Because all this that people try to suggest is because they look at what happened this life. So what happened this life may not be reflected until future. Because you reap what you sow. When there is no condition, it will not arise. So most of these people who rob, steal, or very powerful dictator, who actually unscrupulously build up their own self-interest through various corrupt means or political strategy, they may become very strong, very wealthy. But during that time where there is no condition to bring about downfall, to suffer, they will not suffer because their willpower is very strong. But when they become weak, when something happens, when their support system is gone, I tell you, they will become miserable. It's just like a very successful person. When everything is going his way, the business all will flourish. Then he will be very happy. Then he will be talking about, I still remember, a lot of these people during that time don't believe anything because everything go their way. Then what happened when the financial crisis hit, I remember, during the 1980s and the 1990s, especially the 80s. After it hit, a lot of billionaire, multimillionaire wipe off. Then what happened? That time they convert, become Christian. Then after they come out, they thank God for the success. Understand? Yeah. But the crisis hit again, miserable again, they forget about religion again. Yeah. Then they go about another way. Yeah. Because it is not what they think. It's not because you go to a particular religion, then your life change and improve. Unless you understand that true teaching of that religion, then maybe it's true. Yeah. But if it's not, whatever that come your way, favor, you thank that particular Almighty for what you have. But when the other side happen, then they will say the Almighty is testing you. You no longer thank them. Yeah, I got one classmate, MU. I think Sui An, they all know, Chan Chong Ling. He said the father used to tell him, he said, when the one particular religion came and preached and all things, then they thank their Almighty for the food and all those things. Then the father was very good, or very patient. He waited till all finished and said thank you. Then they left. Then he called all the children together at the table, the food there. Then he speak in Hokkien. He said, whatever the religion say, I don't want to comment. He said, but please remember one thing. He said, if your father don't go and strive, he said, you can every day sit here and thank that Almighty for your food, see whether the food come to the table or not. He said, very straightforward guy. That's why he laughed. And he became very successful too. He don't have to believe in anything. He also went to MU, the cream, graduate as a civil engineer. Yeah. And a lot of us don't depend on the Almighty to be successful in life. Understand? It doesn't mean you cannot believe in the Almighty. You have faith. He will serve you well. He will deliver too. Understand? It has its teaching too, but you have to understand it. So it's not what you believe in, it's what you understand out of those teachings that can improve your life. So do not discriminate. So it's not about good people reaping negative karma. Because a lot of these things, when you don't understand, you look at it from the present life, then you can be deceived. What happened in the past, you may not know. Then how they become what they are, so negative and so deviant, because their willpower. When you exercise willpower, it's the thought. And the will can bring about accomplishment. That's why the Buddha taught the five bases of accomplishment. Remember we went through? The five bases of success or accomplishment. To accomplish anything, you must have these five things. So first is your, what they call, the willpower is very important. Citta, the thought, the willpower. Then there are many other criteria. This is for materialistic success. But when you want to develop the spiritual understanding, it's totally different. Totally different. It's no more using the thought. It's no more using the will. It's using wisdom, understanding, to cultivate the appropriate condition for causes and conditions to arise. Then you reap what you sow, all these things will come. Just like this line, I didn't do anything. Everything just unfold. And I don't have to believe anything. It's just the understanding that unfolds. It's not a belief. It's understanding nature's law like science. Then it will unfold. Yeah. It's just like you understand science, you will not argue against science. Yeah. When there is lightning, if people tell you God is angry, you believe or not? You won't believe it. Because science has proven it. Lightning got nothing to do with God getting angry. Even disaster, tsunami or something, it's not God getting angry. It's the elements, the nature's law, the physical law, then the biological law, this thing. So this is what the Dhamma is all about. When you understand, it's easy for you to develop the appropriate understanding to understand life. And when you understand life, you can live life. Understanding life is to understand the secret of life. The secret of life is the Four Noble Truths. The whole of life, mundane and supramundane, they are all in the Four Noble Truths. That's why when you understand the Four Noble Truths, you will understand life completely. Yeah. And what are the Four Noble Truths? First Noble Truth is the Noble Truth of suffering, telling you about the reality of life and existence. If you go through life, you will confront all this reality. Then the final summary will cover every aspect of life. In short, it is due to your self-delusion that condition you to grasp and cling onto your five aggregate of form and mind that the Buddha calls suffering. The grasping aggregate, born of self-delusion. So that one is related to your conscious mind with the mental intention inside. And the five mental aggregate of form and mind, if you through self-delusion deludedly grasp and cling, you go and check and investigate, you will suffer. So when you understand that, you understand life. Then the second Noble Truth talk about the cause of its arising, which is your craving, positive, negative. Yeah. So craving got three types: sensual craving, craving to be and not to be. So all this you have to understand, then you go into it, then you develop the understanding, then you understand what suffering is and the cause behind. You can manage your life better. Then not only that, the Buddha say, suffering need not be under the third noble truth. Enlightenment in the here and the now, Nibbana can be realized. That is where the Dhamma is. That is where the understanding is. You don't have to suffer when you understand. Then he not only tell you that it is possible, he even teach you how to do the fourth noble truth. He said there is a path, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. If you cultivate it, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So focus on the cultivation. Then you will understand. When you understand, all your question is self-answered. Then you will know what the teaching is all about, how beautiful the teaching has evolved, and how wonderful a teacher Sakyamuni Buddha is. It is because of his perfection, cultivation over a long period, that develops the understanding, and he shared with the world free. And this is the only free lunch that you can find in this universe. Priceless and yet given free. And people fail to appreciate this teaching because they take it for granted. They thought whatever that is given free cannot have much value. Understand? So if you don't have the understanding, the faith, you cannot develop it. Then you cannot develop, you cannot have the gratitude and the respect for the Buddha. So all this is mainly because human beings got this problem. They always go after things that is very, very expensive, pricey. They say expensive one only good. Free one, not good. So whatever that is given free, yeah, they tend to ignore, understand? And I can tell you, if you go and organize this type of seminar and talk and charge people very high, I tell you, a lot of sick people will come and see you. attend your course. Because I have seen it in Japan, the Ogawa one. There people pay, you know. Of course, there's a recommended minimum, but people really pay. Then to improve your life, they pay so much. That's why that organization is so wealthy. They can buy over a golf course in the middle of Tokyo and convert it into a soja, the temple. At that time when I was there, it was, I think, 2006, I think, 11 years ago. That time already cost US $200 to $300 million to buy. Now it's billions. Okay? Yeah. Oh, we got 5 more minutes. Any more questions? I think I finished all your questions, Kevin. So hopefully by now you should be able to develop better understanding. What you need to do is, I think, Kevin, for you to learn, you need to listen to the recording attentively again, then write down what I have mentioned. Don't try to understand first. Write it down. Then after you write down, you read. Then you understand differently. Otherwise, you cannot catch, I tell you, because you don't have good basic from the past. You don't have that. If you have that, you can understand what I share very fast. And you will have a lot of joy coming in. But because you don't have. And the reason why you are here is because you can play a very big role when you understand where your career is related to a lot of these people with problems. And you can be successful. That's why there's a reason why you are here. Oh, yeah. Yeah, very traumatic, huh?
Very unique way. It's not even an accident. It's died in the car, in the carbon monoxide poisoning. Nope, it's not suicide. So, two years later, the father is charged.
Oh, for murder. Traumatic. Yeah. I think there is a field that they study that to help people to come out of the what do you call trauma? Traumatic. Mental condition. There is a type of career, you know, certain doctor they treat people with traumatic experience. I forgot the word, I saw it in the TV. No, psychology is a normal mental problem. This one is trauma one, panic attack one. Like very traumatic one, just similar to what Calhoun has just explain, because the kid suddenly cannot take the shock at the cell. It's like, they call it trauma doctor. that deal with traumatic case. Because they really go through very strong psychological impact, which is very traumatic. And most kids couldn't take it. Even adults also couldn't take it. That is the reality of life and existence. Life is just life. When you understand, simple. When you don't understand, it can be very, very tragic. 10:30. So we end, So let us rejoice, Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And we should thank Calhoun for the question, because it brings forth the condition for us to have this sharing. And this is more towards the mundane aspect of the teaching, how to apply to real life situation. But because the topic is very general, so the approach can be very varied. The variation in the approach is a lot. What I given you is one aspect which I myself went through, which I find it very beautiful, because these are the understanding that this nature evolved out through years of cultivation from the past until now. So without this understanding, it's very difficult for people to come out with their own understanding, to live life, to counsel people, to guide people, and to share with people. Not easy. So what I share with you is, you should say, come from somebody who already have the understanding, that's why he can do it. It's not easy, I tell you. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits, then we end. Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed, then we shall share and dedicate this merits to all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata Chabumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyantang Anamoditwa Chirang Rakantu Lokasasana Itawata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anamodantu Sabasampati Sidiya Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Ibmina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu. Yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you all can pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones.